Today's broadcast was originally recorded on December 19th, 2024.
This felt like Musk freelancing. And it's just like, I don't like it. I'm killing it. It's like, wait, who's this? This guy? Like, I mean, whatever you want to say about the guy, we do have a presidency. He was occupying that office. This is just like elevating like the most obnoxious person into a comment section to like run your nuclear labs and your vaccine protocols and your government. Like, I don't think it should work like this.
I don't think it should work like this either. But apparently, this is how it now works.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. Barely. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP. Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV. Out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN. Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX. Richmond, Virginia's WRWK. Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR. Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR. And Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF. We also stream on the internets every day, coast to coast and around the globe on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us for what will be our last new broadcast of 2024. We will be joined momentarily by two of our favorite guests, two of your favorite guests. Yes, Digby and Driftglass will be here for a bit of a year-end roundtable to wrap things up. And we will also have our final green news report of the year as well with the delightful Desi Doyen. Good day, Desiree. How
Good
are
day.
You? But very quickly, before we get to our guests, at the end of another outrageously difficult year, some quick news headlines of note. First, from our friend Anna Bauer of Lawfare, who sums things up pretty succinctly today. As she writes at Blue Sky, the Georgia Court of Appeals has disqualified Fannie Willis from prosecuting Trump and others in the Fulton County election interference case, citing an appearance of impropriety related to her relationship with former special prosecutor Nathan Wade. What does that mean, and what happens next? Well, she says, first, the Georgia Court of Appeals may not have the last word on this. Fannie Willis can appeal to the Georgia Supreme Court and is likely to do so, and in fact, shortly after Thursday's ruling, she did exactly that. Second, she writes Anna Bauer, note that the Georgia Court of Appeals did not toss out the entire indictment, so another prosecutor could, in theory, take over the case. But the court's decision to remove Fannie Willis from the prosecution means that her entire office is now disqualified from the case. So the line attorneys who have been working on this for 3+ years cannot just step in. But she notes Georgia does have a process for what happens next. Specifically, Georgia has a nonpartisan agency called the Prosecuting Attorneys Council. The director of that council will decide how to proceed. He can appoint a different district attorney or a special prosecutor to take over, or he could decline to move forward with the case altogether. Realistically, though, writes Bauer, I think it'll be quite difficult to find another prosecutor who would be willing to take on this case if the appeals court decision is not overturned by the Georgia Supreme Court. She says this likely spells the end of the prosecution against Trump and others in Fulton County, Georgia. This case, of course, is the broad criminal conspiracy case where Trump was originally charged along with 18 co-conspirators, including fine fellows like his former chief of staff, Mark Meadows, his attorney, Rudy Giuliani, attorney Sidney Powell, and others for attempting to strong-arm state officials into stealing the election in Georgia on his behalf, most notoriously via that infamous phone call where he tried to muscle Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger to, quote, find the 11,780 votes he would have needed to win the state over Joe Biden in 2020. It also included charges against four of his co-conspirators who, on January 7, 2021, unlawfully participated in the breach of statewide voting systems at the elections office in Coffee County, Georgia, copied the proprietary voting software and distributed it to fellow MAGA cronies far and wide in advance of the 2024 presidential election, a story which we were involved in helping to break on the broadcast beginning way back in 2022. If, in fact, it comes to an end, as many expect, that would be the end of the criminal cases that might have gone to trial against Donald Trump following the dismissal of two federal criminal cases filed by special counsel Jack Smith, one for Trump's attempts to steal the election and the other for his theft of thousands of pages of highly classified national security documents when he left office in 2021. Though the New York criminal case, the state case in which he has been found guilty of 34 felony charges related to hush money payments to a porn star to help him win the 2016 election, those are still in place, at least for now. And decisions about sentencing, including if there will be any sentencing, are still pending in that case as of today. Trump still owes millions of dollars in civil liability cases in New York related to his sexual abuse and defamation of writer E. Jean Carroll to the tune of some $83 million. He also owes another $454 million in another suit that he lost in the state where he was found liable for fraudulently inflating the value of his company's assets to rip off banks and insurance companies. Barring news out of New York, Donald Trump will almost certainly be sworn in as our next president as a convicted felon for those charges in New York for the first time in U.S. history, though if he ever actually pays any price for it, that remains to be seen. It is good to be king in a country which, over our 248 years of existence at this point, has never actually had one until apparently now. But who exactly is our new king? Is it Donald Trump or is it his new best buddy, Elon Musk, the richest man in the world who bought Twitter for $44 billion, but by way of comparison, bought not only the presidency this year for a cool bargain basement price of just over $250 million, but he also apparently bought the entirety of the U.S. government along with it. Now, I wasn't even planning on covering this latest so-called government shutdown standoff showdown this week, where a bill must be passed to fund the government to keep it open by Friday, or it shuts down just days before Christmas, because, you know, fool me five or six times, shame on me. Republicans always run these shutdown shakedowns or these debt ceiling hostage crises right up to the deadline before essentially begging Democrats to save them and the country from themselves. But as of late Wednesday, well, this one perhaps could be different. We will see. With a deal already in place, hashed out between Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson and Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer to essentially kick the can down the road with a so-called continuing resolution, or CR, to essentially mostly continue current spending levels until March before another such deadline happens. Elon Musk on Wednesday decided to tweet out that the bill, quote, should not pass. By early evening, the bill was apparently dead, leaving the government barreling toward a weekend shutdown just before Christmas. And then over the next 12 hours or so, Musk went on a tirade against the bill with more than 100 tweets, many of which included out-and-out false claims to his audience of more than 200 million followers on the site he now owns, and his assertion that no bills should pass at all by Congress, by this one or apparently the next one, until Donald Trump is sworn in on January 20. Eventually, Trump himself jumped in to say, yeah, I don't like that bill either. That he, too, is now against that continuing resolution to keep the government open, and that he would only support one if it also included an increase in the debt ceiling, which was not even a part of any of this, this supposedly now dead deal. And it wouldn't be raised, the debt ceiling, until next spring at the earliest. But because he does not want to be responsible for raising the debt ceiling on his watch, now he's demanding it must be raised right now. And, oh, by the way, Trump has also now decided that the bill should kill the entire idea of a debt ceiling entirely because, well, it is true that it's a totally artificial and ridiculous thing on how much a ceiling on how much the government is allowed to borrow, even if going over that amount would default the U.S. government for the first time in history. So it has to be raised as needed, when needed. And that, of course, allows Republicans in the modern era to use that to sort of hold the world hostage to get whatever they're insisting on getting at any given point. But now Trump wants to kill that as well entirely, so it doesn't have to be raised on his watch. As Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat, noted on Twitter, he wants to kill it because, quote, Trump wants Democrats to agree to raise the debt ceiling so he can pass his massive corporate and billionaire tax cut without a problem. Shorter version, tax cut for billionaires or the government shuts down for Christmas. Merry Christmas. Democratic Congressman Dan Goldman said in response to one of Musk's tweets demanding that this routine CR budget deal was in fact, quote, an insane crime against the American people, that, quote, it increasingly seems like we're in for 4 years of unelected oligarchs running the country by pulling on his puppets' strings. Now, as we go to air today, that's the ridiculous spot that the country is now in. We will see where we are by the time we get off air today. But late on Thursday, it's being reported that Republicans have come up with a new package that Donald Trump approves of to try and avert a shutdown. No comment yet from Democrats on that and if they will be willing to help Republicans, as they will likely need. So we will see. But for the moment, that is where we are. Now, a couple of weeks ago, listener Connie sent in a thoughtful snail mail donation via bradblog.com/donate. Thank you, Connie, and included the following handwritten note. Brad, thanks for what you do. I look forward to your program, especially when you bring on certain guests. I'm thinking of the female and male whose names are not coming to me at the moment, who do commentary on various political events. Again, thanks for what you and Desi do. Connie, thank you very much, Connie.
Yes, thanks, Connie.
I, too, look forward to those guests, whatever their names are. And, well, they happen to be with us again today. Joining us now for commentary on various political events are our old friends and fellow old school bloggers, Heather Digby Parton, the award-winning columnist at Salon and the proprietor of Digby's much-beloved Hullabaloo blog. Oh, Heather, how are you, Heather? Come hither.
I'm fine. How are you, Brad?
Well, you know, it's been that kind of, it's been that kind of a year, man. I don't know.
I hear you.
Of course, the also we are joined by the one and only man who is known mostly as Drift Glass, but occasionally as just Bill, who has also been commenting on various political events for about two decades now at his pseudonymously named Driftglass blog, and each week on his very own Professional Left podcast, hosted with his brilliant wife, Blue Gal, from Flyover Country, Illinois. Oh, Mr. Drifty, welcome back, sir.
Well, thank you. And when I write your show, I use the name Connie. So just FYI.
That was you. I thought so.
Yes.
I know.
I have to fish sometimes.
Damn it.
Sounded just like you.
Yeah. Now, listen, I had planned to do, you know, sort of a year-end roundtable with you guys. But given the events of this week, I guess it may be more of a week's-end roundtable at best at this point. So let me get right to what everyone in Congress has been carrying on about, and everyone in America is on the edge of their seats about as we barrel toward the holidays. Driftglass, what's up with the drones in New Jersey?
Oh, come on, man. You've seen Buckaroo Banzai, right?
No, I haven't.
I mean, Yo-Yo Dyne Propulsion, New Jersey, Grover's Mill, the War of the Worlds hoax that wasn't a hoax.
Aha.
It's all a big scam, man. It's an alien invasion. It's the vanguard of an alien invasion.
Well,
and if you had just watched the Buckaroo Banzai movie, you would understand all this.
I guess I would. But I didn't, so I have no idea, as usual, what you're talking about. But that's okay, because
John Lithgow's greatest performance of his entire career. That's all I could say.
And I want to kind of say, well, that's not saying much, but that would not be generous to John Lithgow. Digby, this whole drone thing, do I need to care about it? Because folks in Congress sure seem to, but it sure feels to me kind of like the summer of sharks.
Oh, yeah.
For those of us old enough to remember that, you know, those dumb distractions during the summer, I guess, right before 9/11?
Yes, that's right.
But so that kind of what it feels like to me, Digby, that Republicans would rather do anything but talk about things like, you know, Donald Trump's ridiculous cabinet. So they're doing this whole drone thing. Am I off base there?
Yes. Okay. You're completely off base.
Okay. As usual. All right.
Driftglass is completely right. It's an alien invasion.
All right.
And it's obvious to anybody. The thing is that we just never bothered to look up into the sky until now.
Yeah.
And we all just looked up for the first time and saw all these lights up there, which we'd never seen before. And now we know they've been here for God knows how long, maybe even forever.
Yeah.
But they're aliens. It's obvious. What else could they be?
Yeah,
really?
But
what else could it be?
Well, I couldn't see them until now due to all of the chemtrails that were in front of them.
Right.
Now, almost as important as the drone mystery is the fact that an unelected yutz who appears to have bought not only the presidency, but the entire government for about $277 million a steal has apparently succeeded in killing a bill to keep the government open for a few more months. I expect something has got to give there, and these we'll see what this new package is from the Republicans. But more of note, I must say I am concerned about this unelected guy from South Africa and his apparent co-presidency, unless it's unfair to elevate Donald Trump to the status of co-president at this point. But Digby, what do you make of this? And where do you put the odds that Elon Musk actually read even one page of this bill that he sort of single-handedly killed on Wednesday?
You don't have to even look at the odds. It's all in his Twitter feed. He was seeing various tweets from, you know, people like Cat Turd and libs of TikTok and people like that. And that's what he was assuming was in the bill. He, of course, had not read it. He was just passing those things on. This is terrible. Has to stop. You know, no way doing this.
Right.
And he ended up, I mean, he single-handedly, I think, ended up killing that bill.
Yeah.
You know, there were others, of course, in the Republican caucus, as always, who were not going to vote for it. But that's why Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, mm-hmm. had you know, made the deal in a bipartisan way with the Senate, by the way, which, you know, I think Trump and Musk are unaware that the U.S. Senate is still in the hands of Democrats.
Exists.
But, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Well,
so
you know, Democrats,
them, right?
To be fair, Democrats do a pretty good, you know, job of hiding themselves.
Well, you're right.
So.
You're right. Who else? Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Who's hands
knew?
It's in.
Yeah.
But, you know, but he did this. He single-handedly did this. Donald Trump, I honestly think that what Donald Trump is doing right now is he's golfing. He's holding court in the evenings at Mar-a-Lago with his iPad and, you know, playing his playlist. And he's also screening videos, very carefully curated videos of Fox News hosts that he can put into the cabinet or taking calls from his old friends that want to be ambassadors. Yep. That's all he's doing. And so Musk, who's out there with Vivek, but neither of them having even the remotest understanding of how government works, much mm-hmm. less the Congress, have taken it upon themselves to, you know, I don't know, what do they call it? The creative destruction, or, you know, you just break things and mm-hmm. hope everything goes okay. They've decided that they're just going to do that. And he did that yesterday, proving that he has more clout than Donald Trump, because Trump, and we know this, there's been reporting on this, Trump was well aware of the negotiations, and Trump wanted this thing off his plate before he took office. He wanted to get it out of the way so that he could, you know, jump in. There wouldn't be any, you know, government funding business for at least mm-hmm. a couple of months, and that he could do his executive orders and immigration and all the stuff he wanted to do. He was very well aware that this deal was being negotiated. They'd been doing it since September.
And he could have raised the point about ending the debt ceiling, all
the
of
debts,
that stuff.
Anything, or that he didn't like any yeah. of the spending. He just wanted to get rid of it, as did most of the Republicans and the Democrats, who just wanted to get rid of it so they could all go home for Christmas. So the fact that he was sitting there, I don't know, on the golf course while Musk was blowing the whole thing up, and then came running along afterwards, going, oh, this is terrible, I'm so disappointed.
Yes.
And then coming up with this debt ceiling thing, it showed Donald Trump is very, very weak. I mean, this is the weakest display that I have seen him do, and it's at the hands of Elon Musk. And the thing is, I'm not sure he knows it. So this could get very interesting over the next couple of months.
Driftglass, the Democratic House Minority Leader, Hakeem Jeffries, tweeted out on Wednesday night after this debacle, quote, House Republicans have been ordered to shut down the government and hurt the working class Americans they claim to support. You break the bipartisan agreement, you own the consequences that follows. But would there actually be any consequences if the government is shut down for a month until Donald Trump is sworn in? I mean, does anything that these people do actually matter anymore?
Well, if the TSA agents all go home, then yeah, then there's no airport security. If there's no airport security around the holidays, you're kind of screwed. There are lots of people who are going to go home without paychecks for a long time, who are going to resent that. And there's just this general sense that you blew up the budget before Christmas. I mean, this is a gift. This is just a big, old, beautifully wrapped gift to Democrats. You've got Mike Johnson balancing on the head of a pin, trying to save his, you know, crappy speakership, and this could blow him right off the throne easily, easily. And so you have this sort of triple bank shot of Elon Musk, who all he knows to do, he says the magic words, which are Dems are evil, Democrats are evil. So if there's anything in the bill for Democrats, it's a giveaway to Democrats and must be killed. And he's got the biggest megaphone in the universe, so he gets to shout at people, and they're terrified of him. So one after another, the GOP, you know, which is just cowards and grifters at this point, fell in line. And then Trump had to, as you pointed out, waddle in at the last minute and slap his name on it and say, yeah, yeah, me too, yeah, yeah. Well, okay, Speaker Mike maybe goes down in flames. The government shuts down, parks shut down, services to elderly shut down, Social Security checks don't go out.
And how about the inauguration? Is the inauguration going to happen with a government shutdown? I kind of wonder.
What an excellent question. And I don't think these people have thought through this at all. And I'm like, you know, Keanu Reeves in Speed, shoot the hostage, man. Just step aside and let them have this big, you know, exploding bomb and let them have it. And then I know Democrats have no messaging of their own. There's no megaphone that we own. But as loud as you can, just hit home the fact that these guys are just a bunch of competent F-ups from day one, even before day one, day minus 30. It started screwing this thing up.
Well,
and just repeat that over and over again.
Now, I sense that every Republican in Congress is now not only terrified of Donald Trump, but now they're even perhaps arguably more terrified of upsetting Elon Musk, even more than Trump. Yeah. For fear of his billions of dollars that, you know, that he can turn on any of them in the next primary. So, I mean, what are the real dangers, as you see at Driftglass, of the richest man in the world having this much control over the entirety of the U.S. government from the, you know, from the White House down through really both houses of both chambers of Congress?
Well, it's very, very bad, Brad. That's a very bad thing. And he's obviously reckless, irresponsible. I don't know what drugs he's on or what his schedule is, but he seems to be just out of his freaking mind most of the time. All he reads, it's computer stuff. It's garbage in, garbage out. All he consumes is garbage from his own site and rumors and cat turd stuff, as Digby said. And out comes marching orders. And the entire Republican Party has seen what this guy can do with his money. He can buy a president back into the White House, a convicted felon, a degenerate rapist, back into the White House. What did he do to them? And he's promised them, if you go against this bill, I will primary you. And he has the money to do it. So it's obviously very bad that this lunatic oligarch is running the Republican Party and pulling strings. But this is a golden opportunity for Democrats to say, really? This is your party of personal responsibility. This is your party of the working man being run by billionaires who are just holding the government hostage so they can cut their own taxes.
Very quickly, should the Democrats help, from both of you, this is sort of a yes or no question, I guess, should the Democrats help the Republicans pass whatever this new package they supposedly have come forward with in the past hour or so? Should they help them to get that passed? Because otherwise, they're going to need every single member of the House, essentially, on the Republican side to vote for it. And that ain't going to happen, probably.
I think it was Napoleon. I might be wrong. Who said never interrupt your enemy while they're making a mistake. Democrats should just step aside. After you, Governor, after you, just go right ahead. You run right off that cliff and we're going to stand here and watch because you won the election. You have a mandate. We lost, man. We're little people. You're the big people. So you go do big people things. Well, we just sit over here on the sideline and be very quiet and watch you govern. Go govern, guys.
Well, your problem is, I don't think they can get this passed. Digby, should the Democrats help?
I don't think so. There was some talk that if they were able to come up with a completely clean CR with an complete elimination of the debt ceiling, which Donald Trump was pushing, that maybe the Democrats would go along with that simply because getting rid of the debt ceiling is actually a really good thing. Mm. But I don't think that's not going to happen. And the reason is that the Republicans are completely balking at that. And the New Deal, at what I read as the outlines of the New Deal that they came up with amongst themselves, they didn't invite the Democrats to anything, to create their New Deal. So they're out of it. The Democrats have absolutely no reason to, hey, you didn't invite us to the meeting. So whatever, go ahead. But it appears that it's not in there, that this debt ceiling thing that Donald Trump wanted is only going to be extended, not eliminated.
Right.
And the Democrats should absolutely not go along with that. Absolutely no way. Completely. I'm totally in agreement with Dorothy that, they should just stand back and go, look, we negotiated in good faith on this for months. We were there. We were, going through it all. We had an agreement. You guys backed out. Okay, now it's your baby. And by the way, Donald Trump, Chip Roy, and Freedom Caucus guys, who can never take yes for an answer on anything.
Congressman Chip Roy
already.
From Texas, yeah.
Congressman Chip Roy, and some of the other ones, too, I think it's Ralph Norman, there are a few others,
right,
who are absolutely adamant that they will not vote for this. If that's the case, then it will not pass. Because if Democrats hold fast, it's not going to pass. And by the way, again, there's a Democratic Senate over here that has to pass this thing, too. So, they need 60 votes for this,
yeah,
in the Senate. So this is getting a little bit complicated, and I am completely in agreement with Riff Glass that this is one. If there's one thing the American people have learned over the past 30 years of government shutdowns, these are Republican babies. They do this every single time. Everybody knows it's them. They're the ones strutting around. Look,
yeah, but
the Democrats are invisible. There are no Democrats. Where are they? I haven't seen one since November.
Well, that's a good
question.
Biden
is a ghost. I mean, there's nobody there. It's only the Republicans. That's who people are going to see.
Yeah, but, that's why I asked Driftglass that point, will there be consequences? I'm not quite so sure that there will be. I think people forget about this stuff. Maybe they'll blame the Republicans for an hour, maybe. But if there's no Democrats out there saying,
It's the end of the honeymoon.
Right,
whatever
we'll
honeymoon that he had, I think, is done with this thing. They're showing again what incredible chaos exists whenever Donald Trump is anywhere near the seat of power. And now we have Elon Musk, who's even, I think arguably even worse. because he, even Donald Trump had some people around him going, well, you know, this is the rule and you need to do it. Musk has nothing. He's just on his Twitter. He's on his phone doing this. He's running the government on the phone.
Driftglass, you had raised the point of what happens if there is a government shutdown all the way up through the through the inauguration. And I presume the answer to that would be that, well, there are certain government functions that they are, you know, they determine must continue for security and so forth, that somehow they would keep that in place. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk with all of this that the House Speaker Mike Johnson, that his reelection next year to the speakership on January 3rd or whenever it happens could now be in jeopardy. And TPM's David Kurtz, all right, stop your salivating there, Driftglass. But David Kurtz raises an interesting point that he says, well, who cares if Mike Johnson survives? It's a thankless job trying to lead an unleadable bound of reactionaries. Someone has to do it eventually. But if House Republicans recreate a speakership mess like they produced for Kevin McCarthy in 2023, who was not elected until the fifth ballot on January 7, he notes that could bump up against the January 6 deadline for certifying the Electoral College results. So then what? Unclear that a session could even gavel into existence because no House business may occur until after a speaker is chosen. So your January 20th emergency may be preempted by a January 6th emergency, Bill.
Well, let me just say, this is just between the four of us.
Mike. Of course.
Don't broadcast this.
Oh, I would not.
It is occasionally a great and glorious thing to be in the opposition party. The opposition minority party, when the majority party is completely nuts and completely incompetent and clearly cannot govern without us propping them up and we just stepping aside. So let them have it. I want Democrats on every platform they can find, and I know it's rare these days, just pointing it out. This is what The Daily Show used to do. The Daily Show used to point a camera at Fox News and say, can you believe this crap? Mm-hmm. That was the entire show. It pointed at, and this is what Hakeem Jeffries should be dispatching his people, his warriors, his Moskowitzes, and his AOCs out there in the world to do. Just pointing at this lunacy, at the incompetence of these people, and say, can you believe this? You know, 49% of people voted for this, so I guess this is what they want. It's not what we want. We're Democrats. We'd like to govern, but maybe we won't even have a January 6th. Maybe we will have to storm the Capitol benignly to restore order to a house that is now being run by the MAGA freaks who stormed it last time.
Let's take a quick break here with that notion in mind about storming the Capitol on January 6th. We will be, I think, Des, are we back on the air by January 6th?
Oh, yes, we are back on the air on January 6th.
Oh, fantastic. So woo-hoo! I think it'll go well. Hey, guys, I hope you'll keep your dates open for us. I got to take a quick break here. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about Democrats in this case, as we should, and what they should do moving forward. We're at our year-end roundtable of sorts with the great Digby and the great Driftglass and the great Desi and the regular old me, Brad Friedman. Right here on the broadcast, we'll be back.
The broadcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of the broadcast.
Hold your head up.
Thanks to our occasional bumper music Sherpa, KCP, for his various good and bad ideas over the past year. And thanks to you for sticking with us today, and for all year for that matter. Welcome back to our end of year roundtable with the great Driftglass and Heather Digby Parton. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Okay, guys, you know, as all of this has moved towards the end of the year, we are seeing one corporate head after another, sort of bending to Trump's will. Beyond Elon Musk, Apple CEO Tim Cook, Amazon founder and Washington Post owner Jeff Bezos, Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, et cetera, have announced they're going to give $1 million each to Trump's inaugural fund. And ABC News, actually the Disney Corporation, which owns it, agreed to settle a defamation lawsuit that they almost certainly would have won that was filed by Donald Trump. They agreed instead to pay up $16 million to make that go away. Now, Driftglass, Donald Trump said, "I don't know what's going on. All of a sudden, everybody's nice to me. They weren't last time, but now they're being nice." Well, why are these same companies that were fighting Trump in his first term, why are they now obeying and kissing his ass in advance, even before the second term?
You're familiar with corporations, right?
Yeah, but these same corporations existed in the first term, and they at least showed some of them a little bit of spine. Now they ain't even trying.
Well, there was a possibility that this wouldn't happen, so they're hedging their bets. So they hedged their bets, and now it has happened. And now corporations are amoral machines to generate maximum shareholder value. So what the owners of this week did was invest $16 million in future profits. That's all. That's all they did. This is the Sunday shows. I've done a review of the Sunday shows off and on now for 20 years. This week, for example, it was the same station that had Peggy Noonan on excusing torture. It's the same station that had Matthew Dowd on for months talking about how both sides are equally terrible and Hillary's just as bad as Trump and so forth. There is no penalty to be paid by these people to do terrible things or platform terrible people ever. They're just a corporation making an investment in future profitability. And I expected them to do. I'm shocked that anyone's shocked that they folded, because folding before, you know, greater power in hopes of making more money is what they do.
Digby, I know you wrote a little bit about some of this this week at Salon, but ABC News and Disney's their willingness to settle this defamation suit seems to have emboldened Trump. The very next day, he sued the Des Moines Register for a pre-election poll that he did not like. Now, I know, to be fair, I know a lot of folks actually at ABC News that were are apparently furious about the settlement, that it was actually Disney who kind of forced them to do this. But should media outlets be concerned about what this guy is going to do now? And I guess more to the point, Digby, Heather, should people like you and me and Driftglass be concerned?
Oh, geez. Well, I don't know. I mean, it certainly has crossed my mind. I'm sure it's crossed yours, too. You know, geez, how far are they going to go with this? You've got Kash Patel there, who may be the new FBI director, and Pam Bondi, both of whom will do whatever Trump wants. And so, I don't know, if he sees a stray tweet he doesn't like and decides that there needs to be a criminal investigation, who knows? But these other cases that are happening right now with the ABC and then with the Des Moines Register, those are civil cases that are being brought by Trump himself. And those are really nuisance cases. And he's trying to intimidate people and trying to, you know, make everybody look over their shoulder. I don't know that I think that Gannett, which owns the Des Moines Register, right, being purely a journalistic corporation is more likely to fight it all the way than Disney was, since they have a different, you know, they have a bigger sort of, you know, corporate net to worry about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, everybody's going to be wondering, because when you have the United States government saying they're going to go after the media, whatever that is, and they asked Trump specifically, you know, influencers and you know, podcasters and whatever, and he said, yeah, I think you've got to do it, you know. So yeah, sure. Yeah, okay.
Okay, well, get ready. With that in mind, Driftglass, should Joe Biden, it's reported he's considering issuing a whole bunch of preemptive pardons to a whole bunch of people that Trump and his proposed new FBI director, Kash Patel, have been calling for prosecuting, like your good friend Liz Cheney and other members of the January 6th committee. Should President Biden issue those pardons, or at least offer them to those that Trump and Patel, et cetera, have targeted, including, you know, 60 names that Patel literally included in his book as people that he believes the federal government should, quote, go after? Should he at least offer those preemptive pardons as you see it?
Short answer, yes. He absolutely should.
And good.
Leave it to the people, individual involved, if they want to accept it or not. The whole nicety about admission of guilt and what this says, this is just your best shot at a get out of persecution free ticket. And if they decide to go after you for something else, they'll go after you for something else. But I think it's an important gesture. It sends a message that at least the current president recognizes this for the BS star chamber fascist garbage that it is, and that offers are now on the table for those of you who feel threatened by it to accept as your personal preference or conscience guides you.
Let it be known that Drift Glass is calling for a pardon for Liz Cheney. I just want to have that on the record.
Yes, I am.
There.
I thought I'd see the day.
I know it.
I'm going home now and taking a shower, a long shower.
I wish you would. All right. Let me ask, you know, we've now that we finally know the full reported results of the election, that Trump really barely defeated Kamala Harris by less than 1.5 percentage points, that he again failed to win a majority of American votes. The Democrats actually picked up a seat against Republicans in the House. And according to Cook Political Report's David Wasserman, Democrats could have retaken the House majority with just 7,300 more votes across three congressional districts, and they would have the majority. That said, over the past month or so, now that we know that, is all of this hand-wringing about Democrats needing to reinvent themselves, isn't it kind of absurd, Digby, or am I missing something?
It's completely absurd, but completely expected. This is what Democrats do every time they lose an election. I knew it would happen, and, you know, and suddenly we've got to, maybe we need to, you know, change our views on abortion, which is what we always used to do, or guns, or immigration, or whatever it is. I mean, they do this every time, even though it's a very small difference that would have, you know, given the Democrats a majority. Look, the big takeaway from this election, and there's a big article in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend about how these incumbents all over the world in all of the rich countries, they hate everybody in charge. They are all unpopular. Yeah. In fact, Joe Biden is one of the more popular ones, if you can believe that.
Yeah.
So this is a global phenomenon. It's bigger than, you know, what stance we took on transgender rights or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think the Democrats need to calm down and just let things settle down a little bit. And they'll see one way or the other. Let Trump be the incumbent for a while. It's not a popular place to be.
That said, Drift Glass, 35-year-old Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was unsuccessful in her attempt to win the role of ranking Democrat on the House Oversight Committee this past week. She lost to 74-year-old Democratic Congressman Jerry Connolly, who did have seniority on that committee. Nancy Pelosi reportedly whipped votes against AOC in this case. Did Democrats blow an opportunity here to sort of launch a new generation of House leaders, particularly given the fact that someone like AOC has a tendency to go viral in her questions to witnesses before the House Oversight Committee? Was that a mistake for Democrats?
You know, I'm going to side with my wife on this, who the amazing blue gal.
Yeah.
Who said, not, it might have been, but honestly, AOC doesn't need a bigger microphone. She's got a great microphone. And once you get into those sorts of positions, you're sort of an administrator. You have to make sure your caucus is happy. You have to make sure your people are happy. And you have to do a lot of paperwork and grunt work. And she's much better at, as an attack dog and an articulator of a particular point of view that she's very good at. So it might have been stupid, but I don't think it was terribly destructive, because I think AOC has got a bright future in this party. Mm. And honestly, generally speaking, I think that the gerontocracy that is its heavy hand is laying on top of the party needs to step aside in every opportunity to put a younger leadership in charge. It should put a younger leader in charge. So it might have been a bad idea, but I don't think it hurts her at all. And I think her ability, her million or plus followers, are not going to miss a message from her. And I'm just looking for the fighters to be on the front lines in the fights to come. And she's one of them.
And I will say, to be fair to Nancy Pelosi, she did herself step aside as the speaker or the the leader. Well, officially she did and paved the way for a new generation. So I think she credit where it's due and broken hip where it's not. All right. Exit question as we all go wherever we're going into this somewhat terrifying new year with a new Republican majority, a new corrupt president, Republican presidency. Your thoughts very quickly, and I'm sorry, they will have to be quick, but what should we be most worried about, and then B, most hopeful about, or what are you most worried about and most hopeful about in the days and months ahead? Let me start with Bill.
I'm worried about the people who are most powerless, most weak, most hungry, most put out, most outside, being destroyed or hurt or having unnecessary pain inflicted on them by a party that loves cruelty. That breaks my heart. And the 49% of the voters have given the Republican Party a license to do that. If you're looking for a spark of hope, I'd go over to this excellent blog called Hullabaloo by someone named Digby.
Who?
Yeah, I know. It's just one of those new bloggers who are up and coming young bloggers. Digby wrote a whole thing, referenced a whole thing about my governor, J.B. Pritzker, and the Governors Association that are banding together to safeguard and act as a bulwark against Republican autocracy across the country. And I think that's J.B. Pritzker's got real FU money. He's an heir to the Hyatt fortune. He's got $4 billion to play with. And he's like, you got to come through me first, man. You come for my people, you come for me. And I think people like that on the front lines, linking arms and acting in unison, gives me a lot of hope about what Democrats can do when they're really up against it.
Heather, he took up most of your time there, but he did cite your blog. So very quickly, you got a most worried about, most hopeful about? In 30 seconds?
Okay, well, what I'm most worried about is world events going out of control. The world is very unstable at the moment, and there's a lot of moving parts, and we have complete fools in charge of the United States, the most powerful nation on earth. So I'm a little concerned. Hopefully none of that will happen, but the world does have a way of, you know, going its own way, whether we like it or not. Yeah. Hopeful. I am hopeful that we're going to see some opposition rise up within the Washington Democrats. I'm with Drift Glass about the governors. I think that's really where the hope is of seeing some real leadership. But I'm hoping that maybe these Democrats will band together and at least stand up to this stupid, you know, continuing resolution.
Oh, okay, there we go. Heather Digby Parton can be found on Salon.com. Also, digbysblog.net, which is where you will find Hullabaloo. You can find her now on the Blue Skies at Digby56. And then there's Driftglass. You can find his work at driftglass.blogspot.com. You can download his podcast at proleftpod.com. And he, too, is on Blue Sky at Driftglass. Hey, it's been a delight speaking with you guys all year long. Thank you for all of your great appearances here. Like I said, I wanted you for a bit of a last show of the year for an end of 2024 roundtable. But, we may be calling you in a few weeks for a beginning of 2025 roundtable. I hope you will forgive me in advance. Thanks, both of you, for joining us. Thanks for everything and for joining us, particularly at key moments throughout this past year. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Happy New Year.
And to
you. Happy New Year.
Thank you, sir. All right. Our last Green News report of the year is next. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is supporting you and the things that you care about. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. Right now, as much as ever. If you choose to support us, you can do it really easily, safely, and quickly via bradblog.com/donate. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast.
Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Well, that went well.
Yes.
They were in a suspiciously good mood for some reason.
Better enjoy it while we can.
What are they smoking? Anyway, let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
It's an alternative fuel vehicle mandate to lower emissions, to clean the air, to reduce health care costs, to lower the costs for consumers so they don't have to worry about petro dictators determining the price of oil.
Biden EPA grants California's waiver to phase out the sale of new gasoline cars. Energy Department says Republican plan to expand natural gas exports will drive up prices for Americans. Plus, new study links microplastics to lung and colon cancers.
Well, Merry Christmas. All of those stories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
What do we really know about Santa Claus? He says he's pro-environment, but what does he fill naughty kids' stockings with? Coal.
I knew it. Santa's gone MAGA. That red hat should have been a giveaway. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it's our last Green News Report for 2024, so you better make it a good one.
I'll try.
Good luck.
First, scientists are racing to understand the health impacts of microplastics, tiny shards of plastic that are found everywhere on the planet now, including human brains, lungs, and numerous other organs over the last few years. A new peer-reviewed study this week found evidence linking microplastics to lung cancer and colon cancer, as well as some reproductive problems. Production of plastics, mostly made from fossil fuels, is rapidly increasing and is expected to triple by 2060.
I knew you'd make it a good one.
In other news, a major new Department of Energy report finds that expanding U.S. exports of natural gas will drive up prices for Americans. Months ago, President Biden paused permitting for new natural gas export projects to conduct an analysis of the economic, national security, and climate impacts. It was not a ban, but Republicans lied about it anyway.
And called it a ban.
That analysis was released this week. It finds that expanding exports of U.S. fossil gas would reduce domestic supply, raising prices for Americans potentially by more than 30%. It found new facilities aren't even needed. Europe's gas demand is in steady decline thanks to renewables, so U.S. exports would mostly go to China. It found that increased gas exports would displace new wind and solar projects and wipe out U.S. progress gained so far in reducing climate warming emissions. The Atlantic called the Energy Department's report, quote, a playbook containing the evidence opponents need to launch legal fights to block these new export facilities as not being in the public interest.
And yet Republicans and Donald Trump are in favor of them, I'm guessing.
Oh, yes. In another major move at year's end, the Biden Environmental Protection Agency granted California permission to phase out sales of new conventional gasoline cars and trucks by 2035. Congress granted California a special waiver to set tougher pollution standards many years ago under the Clean Air Act to address the state's notorious smog. California's phase-out is only for sales of new gasoline cars, not used cars, and allows a variety of zero and low emissions vehicles, including plug-in gasoline hybrids. The new California requirements are projected to cut the state's emissions from light-duty vehicles by more than half by 2040 and save consumers millions on energy costs. This week, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear a challenge to California's higher vehicle emission standards brought by Republican-controlled states, but the court will consider a narrower challenge over whether fossil fuel companies have standing to sue to block California's pollution rules.
I bet they do.
Donald Trump and the new Republican-controlled Congress are expected to revoke California's waivers, repeal Biden's tailpipe pollution and emission standards, and eliminate the $7,500 electric vehicle tax credits that lower the upfront cost of EVs under Biden's land landmark Inflation Reduction Act. If so, California's Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom announced that the state will restore those tax credits, noting that car manufacturers are moving toward electric vehicles on their own based on market demand, not government regulations. Here's Newsom at a recent press conference.
We're going where the puck's going. We're going where consumers are going. You already saw last quarter we were over, I think it was 25% of all new car purchases. That wasn't a mandate. That was just consumer choice.
Yeah, and the consumer choice is going to be to come out here to California to buy cars if they're getting a $7,500 rebate on it.
Yep.
For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. We're going to be off for a bit. We'll see you in the new year. Until then, we hope you all have a safe, happy, healthy, and warm, but not too warm holiday. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Icicles on East Charles and tinsel on the tree, but it's a green Christmas for me.
Thank you very much, Desi Doyen.
Yes.
Thanks for all of your fantastic work all year long over what has been, I know, a hellish year.
Thank you, and to you too. I know it's been a heavy load trying to carry all of this, but you know, thanks to our listeners as well for making sure that we get to stay on your public airwaves and do our best to bring you the facts and the analysis that actually matter these days. We try.
By the way, I didn't get to ask you before what you were most hopeful about, although you suggested something during the break there.
I am very hopeful and very happy to hear that it turns out that murder hornets have been eradicated from the United States.
See?
That's a good thing.
See,
those are the northern giant hornets. Remember those ones like in 2020 during the pandemic that could decimate a beehive in just hours? Well, U.S. officials now say that those murder hornets have been eradicated. And so, yay.
So, see, who says 2024 wasn't a good year? Something good happened. Anyway, thank you again for all that you do. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us all throughout the year. It is greatly appreciated. We couldn't do it without you because there'd be no one to listen. But we do appreciate your support, particularly those of you who hit a donate button over at bradblog.com or go to bradblog.com/donate to keep us in mind for your end of year giving. We are still 100% listener supported. We've made it this far with your support, and don't stop now.
Yeah, and thank you so much for your letters and emails. They really do help, and you know, we'll all move together forward.
Even the hate mail, even from the hate listeners. Delightful to hear from you all. Thanks again to our guests today, Salon's Heather Digby Parton and Driftglass of Pro Left Podcast. As you heard the man say, we're going to be off for a while until after the new year. A little bit longer break than usual, thanks to the way the dates for the holidays fell, but also thanks to the fact that we are exhausted after this year and plan to be exhausted next year.
Everybody rest up.
We're going to need everybody in this game. Rest up. Get your Wheaties. We will see you in the new year. God help us all. All right, that's it. You can find Desi on the blue skies at
Green News Report.
And you'll find me over there at The Brad Blog. You can also drop me an email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. We'll see you at all of the above. Until we see you back here next year, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.